Mr. Klaus, good morning to you. You may approach. We've got folks coming in and out of the courtroom, so let's give them a second to get that accomplished. That appears to have happened, so you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Dan Klaus. I'm representing three of the beneficiaries of the estate of Cora Ettman. The issue in this case is in a will that provides for the commercially reasonable disposition of real estate. Does the term commercially reasonable include a commercially reasonable value? In this case, the will of Cora Ettman provided that upon her death, the personal representative was to provide a first opportunity for a tenant farmer to purchase property under commercially reasonable terms and conditions as he and my personal representative may agree.
Do you think the will is unambiguous or ambiguous?
Your Honor, that's the eternal conundrum that lawyers have. I believe it is unambiguous. I believe the term commercially reasonable is unambiguous, and it has to include price as an element of commercially reasonable.
What area of commerce was the decedent concerned with? Agriculture or residential?
The will doesn't provide. The decedent was...
Isn't that a latent ambiguity?
Well, I don't believe that looking at the area of concern of the decedent would give rise to an ambiguity. I believe the decedent would be capable of expressing in the will exactly the terms that she would want if, in fact, agricultural were of concern to her.
She clearly gave a preference to her tenant farmer.
She did. She gave a right of first refusal or a right of first option to the tenant farmer to purchase on commercially reasonable terms and conditions. And if you look at if the tenant farmer does not purchase it, there is no restriction.
What area of commerce had the decedent and her tenant farmer been engaged in?
Agricultural. I mean, so, the land had been farmed as agricultural land. And I don't think there's any dispute about that in the record, but...
But your premise is commercially reasonable includes every use for which that land may be put to.
Yes, I think that if you are using the term commercially reasonable, then that has to be defined by the manner in which people in the ordinary business of selling and buying real estate would define what is commercially reasonable. It has to include value.
Is that the business that she was engaged, the decedent was engaged in?
In real estate?
Yes.
The decedent was engaged in agriculture. But again, I think you have to look at the terms of the will and decide whether or not under the terms of the will, there is a restriction to valuing the property solely as agricultural property. She could have included that in the will. She could have said expressly, I want this property sold as agricultural land. So, but she did not do that.
If your position is the will is unambiguous and that it carries with it commercially reasonable means for the highest and best use.
Yes.
Assume for a moment that it is ambiguous. What path does that take us on?
To me, it leads to the same conclusion.
And why?
Because if, in fact, the will is ambiguous, then you have to look at the record to determine how you would construe the will under a latent ambiguity. And one of the things you would look at are the words that are used and the ability of a decedent in this case to express their intent by saying this will be sold as agricultural property. Or, at a minimum, if the tenant farmer did not buy it, the subsequent provision of the will would include a provision that says, if you're going to sell it not to the tenant farmer, then it should still be sold as agricultural land. I think you would engage in the reasonable terms of construction that you would in any contract.
And then where should we go, then, if we're looking at... If we're constructing on this level, where do we look?
I think you have to look at the terms that are used in the will itself. I think you have to look at what does commercially reasonable mean. And again...
Do we have any help in the law?
Not in the law of wills and trusts, but in the context of UCC, yes, we do.
And why would we go there?
Because it is at least one area of the law where the courts and legislature have defined what constitutes commercially.
In this context, could commercially reasonable be seen as a range rather than highest and best use?
I think inherently in any pricing of real estate, you have to recognize a range. I mean, there is not a...
There a range here factually?
Well, I think the problem was the manner in which this property was appraised by the PR's appraiser limited it to only agricultural value. In fact, he testified he was not competent to appraise it in any other way.
Counsel, do you think let's say we agree it's commercially reasonable should be your definition, but at the same time, is it commercially reasonable to look 23 years down the road as to what might happen to this land versus within the immediate future of that land? I mean, if you go out far enough, you can almost come up with any hypothetical, couldn't you?
You certainly could, Your Honor, but I think in this case, the question then would be, what would an appraiser do with respect to appraising property? And an appraiser has certain bounds within which they have to operate to determine value of property. And extending out 23 years may be unreasonable for an appraiser to do. In this case, the appraiser concluded that looking at its current value, recognizing there is a prospective use, that its current value was for residential development with interim agricultural use. I don't think you have to go out 23 years to do that.
Well, his opinion was in 2040 that the land may be subject to residential use, wasn't it?
Well, it certainly could, but again, Your Honor, I think what the appraiser is doing is valuing that future use at its present value. He is not saying in 24 years this property will be worth that amount. I think all the appraiser is saying is, at present, with that prospective future use, this is what the value of the property would be.
But we're talking about a current sale.
We are
exercising a first option, not exercising a first option decades from now.
Yes, but I think, again, the question is, what is its current value?
In other words, what would a willing buyer pay willing seller now in light of the possibility of future development?
Correct. And the testimony of the appraiser that we brought forward, Mr. Gerdes, recognized that very fact. He said at any existing sale, you will have farmers and developers side by side bidding on the same property.
Now, in this instance, the county court was a trier of fact.
Yes.
That's a disputed issue of fact, correct?
Well, I don't think the construction of the will is...
No, I'm talking about what's the value of the property. That's an issue of fact, right?
It is, Your Honor, but I would point out that the county court never concluded that the value at which the PR proposed to sell the property was a commercially reasonable value.
Before your time runs out, and I'm sensitive to your rebuttal time, it strikes me that removal of the personal representatives is a howitzer compared to the idea of the shotgun approach, or rifle, if you will, would be to undo the sale and get a sale at the value you want. Why is removal necessary, particularly in light of the county court's finding that it was not?
Your Honor, we, in two instances, after we had obtained the appraisal at $1.5 million, roughly, we asked the personal representative to withdraw from the sale and reoffer for sale at its fair market value, and the PR refused. So we had attempted to go down that path, saying, do not close this sale. Certainly, if the court orders the PR that the sale should be closed or should be reoffered and offered for its fair market value, we have no reason to believe that the PR would refuse to do that.
Well, that was really my question.
No, we have no reason to believe that.
Okay.
But we had asked twice.
What would be the legal grounds for the PR to back out just because you requested it?
Well, Unfortunately, that's not before the court at this time. I mean, we have an issue about what, if anything, the prospective purchaser of the property would do. There was no evidence presented at trial as to whether or not there would be an action to for specific performance of the
contract. Well, there's a binding contract at the time of your request, wasn't there?
There was a contract existing for the sale of the property.
Yes, but you're asking the PR to break the contract.
Yes, we are. And the consequence of that would be to be determined by future actions, if any. I mean, we don't know what the schedule
is. The agreed-upon price was actually more than the agriculturally valued price. Does that make a difference in your analysis of this, or should that make a difference in our analysis?
It actually does, Your Honor, because what it tells me, that when I look at that circumstance, is that the PR was not valuing this simply as agricultural ground, but attempted to value it as something more. And in fact, without the advantage of any legitimate appraisal, qualified appraisal, for this ground as development property, she attempted to value it as such.
What's the principal tenet in interpreting a will? Isn't it to uphold the intent of the testator?
It is.
And can it reasonably infer that the testator intended to sell this to his tenant so he could develop it as a housing development when the tenant has been a farmer for any number of years on the property? What would be the obvious intent that the testator wanted to do for that tenant?
I think
It's not what your clients think the value is. It's what the testator's intent was in drafting this will.
Right. And the intent, I think, from looking at the terms of the will.
Well, there's only one word in there that you're hanging your hat on, and that's commercially.
Actually, there are two principles there. If I may continue.
You may.
Okay, thank you. There are two principles here. To begin with, it is what the will says. But secondarily, it's what the will does not say. And I think the court needs to look at the will, and as the cases suggest, the court must assume that the maker understands the meaning of the words that were used. But that also includes the words that were not used. And in this case, what she did not say is this property should be sold at agricultural value. She was capable of doing that. She did not. Instead, what she placed in there was a term, commercially reasonable terms and conditions. And
what kind of a precedent would that set for the probate community if we put out some principle of law about what was not said?
Well, I think the context here is trying to interpret the intent. That's what I understood.
Is it a reasonable interpretation of the intent that the testator wanted to sell the property to his tenant at a fair price?
I would agree with that. That was at least
the first. And you're saying the fair price has to be the highest and best use of this property as something that might be developed in a commercial residence 20 years from now.
If, Your Honor, if in fact those words commercially reasonable had been removed from the will, then I would agree with you on the terms and conditions as they might agree.
So you're hanging your head on one word, commercially.
That is certainly a part of it. I would agree, because they have to have some meaning. If they're included in the will, they have to have some meaning. To me, commercially reasonable, price has to
be. Are you attributing that much sophistication to this deceased?
Well, I'm attributing what the courts previously said in cases that the court is to assume that a maker of a will understands the meaning of terms. And those terms were included for some reason beyond just to fill the page. So I think we have to attribute some meaning to the term commercially reasonable. It's the only way you can interpret it.
How about fair price?
That could have been used, or it could have been said at agricultural value. I mean, there are a lot of terms that she could have used that would have
testator, replaced. This isn't a holographic will. The testator didn't write this. The lawyer did.
True, but the testator executed it. And again, the courts have to give meaning to the words and assume that the testator knew what the words mean when she executed the will.
But would this be an unreasonable result regarding the intent of the testator to sell it to his tenant for $900,000 when the appraised value was $800,000 or
something? Well, when the appraised value at ag value is $800,000, but when it's highest and best used or commercially reasonable value, that's the question.
Let me, I know your time's expired, but I have one more thing to throw at you, and I don't think it was really addressed. To the extent that it goes on beyond commercially reasonable terms and conditions and says, as he and my personal representative may agree, to what extent does that phrase, as he and my personal representative may agree, connote some discretion or softening of the harshness of commercially reasonable?
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that the context of an agreement between the parties in the absence of commercially reasonable gives maybe more discretion to parties. But I don't think you can isolate that phrase and remove the term before it. I think what it's saying is what was previously discussed. This was an arm's length negotiation. There was no intent here to give the tenant a good deal or a better deal. It was a commercially reasonable
deal. But we looked to all the words, and it wasn't just under commercially reasonable terms and conditions. It didn't stop there, which respectfully I suggest your interpretation sort of does stop there. And I want to give you a chance to explain why you think it doesn't.
And I appreciate the opportunity. I think in any arm's length transaction, I think the words that you're focusing on are really a little redundant, because in any transaction, the parties have to agree to reach a contract. So the question, there would be no contract for sale here if they had not reached an agreement on the terms and conditions.
So your answer is that phrase is redundant?
I think in the context here, I think it has to be, because there would be no contract if in fact they hadn't reached an agreement.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Usher, good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Christina Usher. I'm here today on behalf of the appellee, Cheryl Brown, in her capacity as the PR for the Michigan I hope to have time to discuss the standard of review. I think that's important here, but let's dive back into what the will actually is. I think it's very important in looking at the context of commercially reasonable terms to note that the decedent starts off by saying, I direct my PR to provide my current farm tenant, Doris Talcott, the first opportunity to purchase the real estate owned by me under commercially reasonable terms and conditions. As he and my PR agree, I also think that sentence is very important. And then she bookends it by saying, it be my desire that Norris Talcott be given the opportunity to purchase said real estate before any other. So the thing she repeats twice in there is she wants it to be sold first to Norris Talcott. So if you're weighing the value of those words, you have to give more weight to the fact that she wanted it first to go to Norris Talcott.
Okay, you disagree with your opposing counsel's characterization of the words, as he and my personal representative may agree, as redundant. You don't think they're redundant?
No.
What's your characterization of the significance?
Pardon me. My characterization is that those two parties are the ones that were to come to mutual terms of agreement. And if you look at the next sentence in the will, she says if Norris Talcott's not interested in the property or they are unable to come to mutual terms of agreement, then it can be sold at a public or so it seems to me that use of mutual terms of agreement informs what she meant by commercial and reasonable terms as agreed upon by the PR and the tenant.
Are there other words in the will about discretion that the personal representative should have?
Yes, the decedent gives all power and authority and discretion to the PR to do anything she needs to do to settle these. I think that's also important. That's in the will. And obviously the UPC also grants a PR the right to sell land without a court order. You're given 27 powers in the UPC, the PR, to determine and settle the estate. So they're given a lot of discretion. And in terms of the idea that because of a few errors disagreed with her conclusion, she's not under, the PR is not under a duty to substitute her judgment and her knowledge for those of a few complaining errors. It's important to also understand that the PR here, Ms. Brown, is also an heir of the estate, so any sale will affect her distribution. She was also the power of attorney for Ms. Edmund for her passing, so there's obviously a trusted and knowing relationship there. So if we have two interpretations on the table, I certainly think deference is given to that.
So what about whether this is ambiguous or unambiguous, and does that make a difference in what we ultimately do?
It does, Your Honor. I don't believe this term is ambiguous. I believe...
So you agree with your opponent?
Yes, that it, I believe commercial reasonability is a... I agree that it's not ambiguous. However, I agree the process of determining commercial reasonability is different. I believe it's a determination of fact. And I believe that because that's what, again, relying on the UCC as the appellant does, that's the body of law that discusses the term of art, commercial reasonability.
Does commercially reasonable mean something different to a tenant farmer than it might to a real estate developer?
Absolutely.
And is that significant here?
Yes. And the UCC actually states a variety of factors that should be considered when determining commercial reasonability. One of them is the type of dealer. Now, neither one is really a dealer here, but they are involved in farming. And in terms of the meaning of commercial, agriculture is definitely a means of commerce.
Council,
so it's a sustainable farm.
I'm sorry, go ahead and finish your answer. I apologize. One of the things that strikes me as a little bit unusual here is that your client would benefit by the extra $500,000, but yet you're here fighting against that. Can you help me understand why?
Absolutely. Ms. Brown is doing her level best to do what she thinks the decedent wanted her to do and was instructed to do by the terms of the will. And she understands this farmland, Cora Edmund inherited from her brother. It's been farmed on the record we know for sure since 1993. She farmed it since 2002. This is a tenant that's been using a tenant on this property since 1993. So Ms. Brown, knowing the decedent, knowing the terms of the will, is trying to affect what she believes the will tells her to do, which is sell the farmland to the farm tenant at a reasonable farm price.
Did she ever have an offer for $1.4 million for the sale of this property?
No. That's a theoretical. That's just from the appraisal. So we have a sale before us that is concrete. It's subject to a contract. We know there are no conditions that will close quickly. There's no due diligence period. It's a concrete sale right before her, as opposed to this theoretical sale that we have no identified buyer. I think it's important.
Would there be a risk involved in buying the property for $1.4 million when the actual farm value is worth $800,000? Is that a development risk?
I believe it is, and I believe it would lend to a much more complex and risky sale.
What's the PR's exposure then?
If the sale falls through? Well, I mean, there's certainly holding costs. That, again, the Great Plains appraisal shows a 6-month to 2-year marketing period to sell it as a community unit plan, as opposed to the sale, which could be sold basically as soon as the court rules. So there's certainly more risk involved in the holding costs, in marketing, and then maybe having the sale and then have it fall through and then having to go find another buyer. I think that's all part and parcel of commercial reasonability.
If this court were to define commercially reasonable for future use by lawyers and citizens, how should we do that and why? Why should we do that?
I think it should be done in this context. It is in a farm context. If I can think of other, the appellant argues that if it says commercially reasonable, it has to mean highest and best use. But there's other examples in the law where a fair market value is limited to current use, not a potential future use. In the IRS code, if you make a charitable deduction of property, they only will value it at its current use. They won't let you speculate as to its possible future. It's true with assessed property values. It's based on its current use, not a potential highest and best use in the future.
Do you think we would have a different case if there were actually a binding offer placed in evidence at that the higher appraised value? If you truly had, in the context of a different area of real estate law, the upset bid?
That would certainly impact the analysis, but given the fact that we think that the intent of the decedent is to first sell it to Norris Talcott, it wasn't that they could possibly sell it for more elsewhere. It was, could you come to reasonable terms with Norris Talcott? So certainly it would say it's not as theoretical if there was a sale on the table.
If you had a cash offer for $1.4 million and you've got the cash offer for $900,000, how do you say that those two are equally commercially reasonable?
Well, I want to know the other terms of the $1.5 million sale. Is there a due diligence period? Is it conditioned on financing? Are they going to get a survey first? Do they have concerns about the status of the house?
Well,
those are all part of the...
My hypothetical was a cash offer, but no other terms.
Sorry, I missed that.
Okay.
I do, because we're back to determining what the decedent really wanted here and whether it's reasonable or not to sell it to Norris Talcott at that price.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, you're kind of... If you say that you have to sell it at the highest price, you're kind of saying, testator, you have no right to even offer it to the tenant.
Right, and we don't believe that the highest price is the determining factor in this analysis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? No, we do not have any time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is Froberg.